Hey friends, thank you so much for listening to today's episode. It is brought to you by your friends over at GarmCompany.com. That's the graphic artist resource merchant, home of the Growcase Big Book of Inspiration. With over 200 logos, emblems, and crests, this book is a perfect download to keep on your desktop whenever you're looking for a little inspiration or you need some parts, right? You know, when you're designing something and you got that little pizza slice, you're like, I don't know, it feels empty. I need some pieces. I need some parts. I need to fill it all up. We'll fill it up with inspiration from the special edition of logos, emblems, and crests with over 200 images waiting for you over at GarmCompany.com. This download and every product on the website you'll save when you use the coupon code AID. And I would like to recommend a halftone and crosshatch brush called Luce, which is an absolutely perfect tool for when you're doing an illustration and you quickly want to add in some crosshatching, but you need to have it controlled. You need to do it quickly. And you also want to be able to control like how distressed, how warm it feels. It's such a great brush. I would highly recommend it, as well as all products over at GarmCompany.com. Coupon code SITEWIDE AID. Thank you, Garm Company, for sponsoring every episode of this summer season. It's been 9 summers of adventures in design and 7th summer sponsored by the Circle of Trust. Today's episode was made possible by members of the COT. If you'd like to hear our entire archive of over 1400 podcasts and some workshops and so much content and be a part of our community over on Slack, sign up today at AID.network, become a member of the Circle of Trust, and make sure AID keeps on putting out 200 episodes a year. This is a conversation that is so fun to have, so important. That today's episode is made possible by the Circle of Trust and free for all. Mike Brevik, welcome back to Adventures in Design. How you doing, bud?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing awesome. Before we go down this wormhole that we're going to get in, anything new going over at CyberDog since the last time that we talked? Because once we get into our next conversation, it will be like, it won't even matter that you have a day job because we're going to get so into it.
Right. You know, just kind of plugging through the year, we are staying busy. And
that's great.
I think everybody's coming off the fog of 2020 and we're just killing it this year. So it's been good.
If you had to judge or forecast the market, what do you think it's like right now for the boutique studio level?
You know, I think it's busy, but I will say that the one thing I'm seeing right now with clients and just kind of the inquisitive side of clients,
yeah,
is their expectations are a little out of whack because they want things to go back to normal so bad and so fast that we're having to kind of talk them through some of that and understand that the journey, I wouldn't say it started from zero, but it somewhat started over and we have to be patient.
So there, when you say that, as far as like impressions and clicks and products sold, like are they just expecting to get back to the same interaction they had with their audiences and before the snap?
I think it's all of it. It's trying to get back to where they once were prior to the snap, but then keeping in mind that, you know, Facebook iOS changes,
yes,
just the way Google, Facebook evolves, like the world didn't necessarily stop turning in the last 18 months. So those evolutions, adaptive. That landscape changed.
Yeah. No, you're right. Because, you know, certain projects, certain clients, they may have went, you know, quote unquote offline because, you know, you're a cruise industry and you couldn't cruise, or, you know, just there's some things you just physically couldn't do due to all the restrictions, but that doesn't mean that the world paused waiting for them, right? Like there was a massive evolution of, you know, meetings going through Zoom, like what we're doing today. And, you know, people found a lot of different entertainment sources, like the numbers for YouTube and like independent content creation, like, you know, what I do, the numbers are so massively up. Now, the downside is so are the amount of people that got into it. So it's not like everybody saw a spike, but there is a huge audience there just because I think what people wanted more than like scripted escapism was they wanted to feel like they were hanging out with people. So, you know, live streaming and stuff like that was kind of in its infancy stages before the snap has really matured and blossomed into something where people feel like they have their buds. And now that the world is open, they're like, I these people were here for me during the weird times. I want to hang out with them during the good times and see what they get into. So it was a good time to make relationships, but definitely I could understand that some clients might think, hey, why do these metrics fill off? I was like, dude, 18 months ago, the world changed.
Right. Yep. And I think there are those who embrace it, which I think
sure.
is good.
Sure.
It's just going to take us a while to have the expectation catch up to the reality.
Well, you know, that's the one of those interesting things where people see headlines and they know their own history and then they try to figure out, why isn't this working for me? And it's like people have come up to me. I've been doing the podcast professionally since 2014. And, you know, these articles come out. Podcasting, the best way to grow your business, podcasting, the medium of the future. And every time podcasting explodes, my audience got smaller. And people are like, dude, I bet you're raking it in now. I'm like, no, actually, it was awesome in 2012 when we didn't know what we were doing. It was good in 2014 when I formed a business. But what people don't understand is those headlines invite so many other people to go down career into podcasting. And it's like, I just can't compete with Joe Rogan and Dak Shepard. You know what I mean? Like, I don't have the brand awareness of those guys. And well played on those guys. I mean, you know, Joe Rogan's no slouch. He was a comedian. He was a TV show host. You know, he became like a martial arts guru. So he found a path to get where he's at. But what people don't understand is, like, every time the pie gets bigger, so does everybody that shows up looking for a slice. And so I think a lot of times clients can hear, like, you know, Facebook sales are the wave of the future. Why are Facebook sales down? Well, guess what? Everybody else is chasing that wave of the future. You're not the only one paddling out to try to catch a wave, my friend.
Well, and the part that people have to remember is, whether it's Facebook, Google, whatever, they're always to some degree working against you, because they're always trying to find different ways to monetize their product.
Yes.
So when you get frustrated at the evolution of, you know, why does Facebook do that? Because they're trying to make more money. They're trying to figure out, from your profile, from the segments, how can we adjust this just in a certain way where we make more money? And they're a profit center. They're a business. So that evolution isn't by accident. It's those companies trying to evolve to better their situation.
Well, it's also sort of the mistake where people, I'll never pay for a podcast, because in their mind, radio is always free, even though the radio, you know, the radio stations made billions of dollars, you know, and your old man, like, suffered through commercial after commercial after commercial on his way to work because radio was free. But those commercials are what paid for it. So now that, you know, way too late, Spotify and iTunes and everybody's offering these podcast subscriptions, like, and people are up or like, why do I have to pay for this? That's the same problem that Google and, you know, Facebook got into, whether you're talking about Facebook or Instagram, is that people perceive it as a free product. And before they introduced those crazy algorithms, you could really grow at Instagram at a fast pace. Then when they got bought out by Facebook and the algorithm came in and it became more of a business, people got really, really frustrated. Now, my frustration here is this, Mike. If I could pay money and see Instagram grow, I absolutely see the value in it. But the problem is, and you know this better than anybody for what you do with CyberDogs, if you're going to pay money to grow at social media, we're talking a lot of money. We're talking, you got to at least be willing to spend $5,000 a month to move the needle. And I know that I would get something back at $5,000 a month, but it's the leap of faith of, well, how many months do I need to put 5Gs in until I'm seeing the podcast grow $10,000, $15,000 a month so that I can say, okay, I'm putting in, you know, this deposit, but my return is, you know, 200%, 150%, 300%. So there's not really a way for the small guy to make money off of Instagram, because if you only throw $100 on a post, you're going to see a couple of normal people, but after, say, 12 hours, it's going to just be a bunch of people from, like, the Middle East. And if you're selling posters and t-shirts, you're like, I've never shipped a shirt to India. I don't know why I paid so much money to get a lot of Indian likes. No offense to India. I'm sure they're great folks, but they're not my customer. I have not sold one item there. Getting likes from them is not going to move the needle for me. So it's a really interesting method that first it was free, it's pay to play and it works, but you got to really pay. And not everybody is in that bracket, you know?
Yeah. And that's, I mean, I have that conversation probably more than I'd like.
Oh, I bet.
Managing expectations, yes. What's your goal, whatever. And I tell clients, like, you either have to somewhat to some, you can get lucky, don't get me wrong, But in most cases, you either got to spend your way to the top or befriend a Kardashian. Those are your two options. if you can go find a Kardashian to retweet everything you do, you probably increase your chances by 100-fold.
Well,
but that's probably not an easy task.
But Mike, you are so correct, because the Kardashian is it's basically like a metaphor for, you know, social capital. And that was why over the pandemic, I doubled down on YouTube, because I realized the power and connectivity of seeing somebody on a TV screen. It makes you feel so much more connected to that person. And I doubled down and I doubled down and I doubled down. And now not only am I monetizing my YouTube, but my goal was, if I can grow on that platform, it will funnel down to everything else that I'm doing. And it's a really weird way to build your podcast and your other things you do, like, you know, coaching and all this other stuff. Like, it's a really weird angle to go, like, I'm going to double down on Disneyland YouTube videos and it'll make my design podcast grow. But I could see how that is a funnel for other things. And my God, is it starting to really, really work? And here I was thinking, do more for the podcast, do more for AID, and it'll grow that way. And more of the same just got the same results. But more of something different is giving me very different results. So I absolutely understand what you're saying. I didn't have the money to like spend to grow, but I had the bandwidth and the accessibility to become my own Kardashian. And, you know, it's still baby influence, but that influence is real. And thinking of your audience as a friend is the best way to build that connection. So I completely understand you have to have these conversations with people that see the world as line sheets. And you have to sort of get in there and be like, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but here's the truth about how all of this works.
Yeah. And it's honestly about finding value in the things that don't make logical sense.
Right. Right.
If you can find something that you're passionate about that is a third, fourth cousin to what you're doing, explore that option. Because if you can grow that and make that a funnel, it'll drive to your other part of your business.
Well, because ultimately what people end up becoming connected to in today's world are personalities. So the reason why some people have massive channels and all they do is just eat food or you know, they find their niche. But then after that, it becomes like, well, I don't even care what game the guy's playing. I just like the guy. So if the guy's playing a new game for 4 hours, I'll put it on while I work because the guy keeps me company. And it's very, very hard to measure that connectivity and that sort of relationship. Like, it's unbelievable. So yeah, you're absolutely right. The Kardashian way is the backdoor. Well, I shouldn't say Kardashians and backdoors. That just got us in a real weird spot. But anyways, we'll move on here. So speaking of you kind of did a very similar thing, all based around relationships and things that you get into. And I'll tell everybody how we're getting into today's core topic, but I did want to talk a little bit of marketing and cyber dogs with Mike before we go down this wormhole. When we did our first interview together and we stopped recording, Mike and I were just hanging out and chewing the fat and talking about our equal love for Lincoln Design Co. And by the way, everybody, Dan and I are in talks. I think I'm flying out to Portland to shoot some videos and record some interviews with the boys. So they'll be back soon. But we were talking about art and design and everything. And he started talking to me about comics, which is an area that I'm not, you know, super versed in. And then Mike started telling me this story. And I immediately go, hey, this is a whole other podcast, bro. We got to get together and do this. And the stars aligned where he had time to come onto the show. So I'll just let you start how you got into this. But I want to just interject this real quick before you take over. You're a sports guy and a comics guy. So when McFarlane started making like crazy, crazy sports memorabilia, you were probably the happiest guy in the world when those two things overlapped. Were you, because we're about the same age when those started to pop. Was that like a glorious moment in collectability for you?
It was a double-edged sword because I was pumped, but I was also kind of pissed because I'm like, finally somebody did it. But at the same time, why didn't I do that? Because what he did there,
yeah,
although albeit genius, was also so obvious. He made them so accurate and so lifelike. And it's just like, that makes all the sense in the world. But why didn't I think of that? Fantastic. And yes, I totally geeked out at that moment. And it's Todd McFarlane. So like, he's just fun in general. So the way he has built that over the course of what now, it's probably been 20 some years.
Yeah.
He's killing it.
it was so interesting because you're taking a guy who's so good at Comic-Con world, right? And we often think of those kids don't watch sports. But when he took all of like the modeling and expertise that he learned on creating these, you know, insane Spawn figures that were, they were collectibles. They weren't action figures. I mean, you couldn't really play with them. They're just so beautiful to look at. And then he's like, I wonder what it looks like when I do that to Larry Bird. And it was like phenomenal.
Right.
So yeah, so it was definitely an interesting Venn diagram of how these things cross over. But, you know, my friends over at Violent Gentlemen, they'll just drop like, you know, bizarro musicians. They'll be like, you know, Lars from Rancid is a huge hockey fan and he loves going, you know, and seeing San Jose play. And they have this great story about Lars is at the Staples Center and they're watching the Kings play. You know, they're in like the baller seats. So there's all these like corporate Kings fans around them. And you know, Lars is like a hardcore like fan. So he's talking shit to everybody. But the problem is he forgets that he's got his face and his neck and his hands tattooed and he has a mohawk. So everybody's like, I'm not going to talk shit back to this guy, but he's a sports fan. So he's like trying to get rowdy. So then like, you know, in between periods, he goes and just brings beers back to everybody. He's like, guys, let's have fun. And then the shit talking began and they realize, oh, I can talk shit to this guy when the Kings make a goal and he won't murder me. But right. Also what helped is when his face was up on the Jumbotron and they're like, you know, Lars from Rancid's here like, oh, he's a rock star. That's why this guy looks this way. He's not just a serial killer that wandered into an NHL game. So as a sports guy and a hockey fan and as a design guy, let's just open up. Like, how did you get into this thing that we're going to talk about?
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm from a small town in Minnesota, so kind of everybody did sports and whatnot, but I was always an art kid, was always drawing, cartooning. That was always kind of my thing. And not that I don't enjoy the story of comics, you know, Superman, Batman, all those things, but what really drew me to it was the art and, you know, getting a comic and being able to flip through the pages and look at the art and trying to recreate it at home and trying to, you know, do the best I can to learn how to draw like that was just a huge part of my childhood. I drew for hours upon hours every day. And where it kind of jumps into the connection part to what we're going to talk about was, again, from a small town, one of the things we always used to do is we'd, in the fall, we'd go help my grandpa rake leaves and whatever. And he'd always pay us a dollar.
Yeah.
So keep in mind, like this is the early 80s, mid 80s. He'd pay us a dollar and typically we'd spend it on junk, pop, candy, whatever. And one of the last times we raked leaves before he passed away, he paid me the dollar and he said, hey, don't spend it on junk this time. So I bought Booster Gold number 7, which is a comic book. Yeah. And it had Superman on the cover, basically getting his ass handed to him by Booster Gold. And I bought that comic. My grandpa passed away and I always just kind of hung on to that comic. And that was kind of one of my last stories with my grandpa.
Yeah.
And fast forward, however many years, I always wanted to be a comic book artist. That's part of what I went to school for, is to be an illustrator. Yeah. And I always thought, man, at some point in my career, I want to go that route. It just didn't happen. Marketing took me a couple different ways and I ended up in web development, e-commerce, those kinds of things.
Well, pause for a minute though. A lot of us as kids, because everything you're saying is right up my alley. I didn't really read comics, but I love flipping through them. You know, How to Draw Comics the Marvel Way is like one of the best illustration books you can ever have. Give it to every kid you know that picks up a pencil. So being a comic artist was one of those like, I would love to do that. But bro, now that I'm an adult and I see how hard my friends grind that do that, I put it up there with tattoo artists as one of the worst art jobs. Not that I'm not devaluing what they do, because what they do is phenomenal. And the skill set to be able to crush that hard consistently, it's unbelievable what they're capable of. But I don't think it's a fair trade to them because they make shit money and they are given the impossible task. And literally they have to sit down every day and go, if I don't get 8 pages done today, I'm behind. And that's too much pressure to put on somebody. They learn how to adapt and crush. But man, oh man, that was one of those jobs I thought that would be glorious. Now I realize that would be a living hell that I would never want to get into.
Yeah. And, you know, as a kid, you have no idea. You just think you're going to sit around and draw superheroes and make a bunch of money, which is not how it works at all.
No.
And now that, you know, where I'm at in my career, I do know that you know, there's a small percentage of them that probably do very well for themselves.
Right.
They're either producing their own content or whatever it is. But yeah, the vast majority of them are working for one of the big three. Usually it's the big two, and they're getting so much per page or by task, whether or not they're an inker, a penciler, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And, you know, they don't own their art. They don't get to kind of carry that with them throughout their career. And it's, to your point, a very rough racket, not only to get into, but to sustain and get your name out there. And I learned that over the course of, you know, my teenage years into college and whatnot. Sure. And that was part of the reason why I was like, I don't know if I can do that. Cause obviously I'm living in Minnesota. At that point, the comic book world was New York.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now it's a little bit on the West Coast, but it was a lot more in New York, and it just didn't happen. And as an entrepreneur, I think you'll relate to this. You have a lot of good days where you're blowing your own smoke up your own butt to keep things
sure.
going, and you're drinking the Kool-Aid, you're ready to go, and you're always ready to throw down. And every once in a while, you have one of those afternoons where you're like head in hand, you're like, what am I doing? Like, this is way harder than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah. It's a roller coaster.
Yeah, it's a roller coaster. And on those days, you know, whenever I feel like this thing's tanking and I'm really sick of it,
yeah,
I just do something for somebody else. And that's kind of been my thing. If I get out there and do something for somebody else, it makes me forget about my own problems. I can help somebody in the process, and I can quit being a baby about my current situation.
So that is some of the best life advice you could give anybody, because in many ways, and I say this all the time, your professional career is just like your dating life, right? And sometimes when you're dating somebody, you got the butterflies. It's amazing. Oh my God, I can't believe I'm holding her hand. I can't believe we're doing this. We're having dinner by the ocean. It's beautiful, blah, blah. And sometimes it's just rough. And sometimes relationships deteriorate and they fall apart. And when you're feeling sad, you've got two options. You can just wallow in that misery, or you can just stay busy. And maybe sometimes that's just getting right back out there and dating, or maybe sometimes it's just like doing something that just occupies your mind, hanging out with your friends, going to the movies. And I love that. Like, being an entrepreneur will push you and challenge you in every way. And sometimes it'll just be challenging to say the word, as if I just try to get it out. But the challenge is to minimize the downsides. It's okay to be introspective. It's okay to figure out, like, how do I learn from the mistake I just made? Or why did, you know, Mike, you know this feeling. I worked really, really hard for a goal and I just achieved it. And now why do I feel sad? You know what I mean? Like, because a lot of times we put happiness in these metrics. If I can make this much, if I can get this many people, or if I can book this client, I will then be happy. And then you reach that goal and you're like, fuck, I'm still not happy, because it doesn't make us happy. It's the chase we're after. So I love the idea of when you're feeling down, the distraction of giving good elsewhere, right? Like, just committing yourself to something else, because what that's going to do is that's going to reignite your stoke. You're going to feel something great from that. It's like when I go to Disneyland with people that have never been there before, I steal their magic. And that's essentially what you're doing, right? Like, is you're showing somebody else what you're capable of, which then makes you feel more self-confident about what you do. It gets you over the hump. That next meeting you go in, you're back to having the self-confidence. You got big project energy, and boom, you're able to book and pitch and do what you need to do. So that alone, we could end the podcast right now and feel like I gave everybody a great chicken nugget on your behalf, but the story gets better.
Yeah. So I'm always looking for that non-typical detachment, right? So right. If I'm crying in my soup about whatever my problem is, it's like, I got to do something for somebody else, figure this out. So I keep a printout of Booster Gold No. 7 cover up in my workstation here in my home office. And I've had it hanging next to me probably for, man, I'd say 15 years, something like that. Just cause I love it, but also cause it's always kind of that reminder. And I was sitting here on that day looking at that graphic and thinking, you know, what the hell am I doing, kind of a thing. And then I start thinking, I wonder what Dan Juergens is doing. Dan Juergens is the artist that did that cover. And he also wrote and, you know, drew the Death of Superman. So like, in many circles, he would be considered, you know, probably on the Mount Rushmore of comic books, because he's fantastic. And that's what I was thinking. I wonder what Dan Juergens is doing. So I Googled Dan Juergens and I did a little investigative Google work and found that, you know, hey, he's from Minnesota. And I started kind of just digging into it a little bit. And I went to his website and it was not good. It needed a lot of work. It was very dated. And as I was flipping through it, I had already kind of come over the hill as far as detaching myself from my problem, because I was investigating, God, I wonder why he doesn't have a better website and why he's not doing this.
I love that.
And then I started thinking, I wonder if he wants help with a website. I wonder if he wants a free website.
Yeah.
I wonder if I could help him with other stuff.
Yeah.
So I sent him an email and I can't remember exactly what I said, but I introduced myself. I told a brief story about how I came to be a fan and my grandpa, that whole thing. And I just said, it's going to sound weird, but no strings attached. I would like to offer you a free website. I'd like to get it back to where, you know, you want it to be, to represent you, your art, all these different things. Don't be afraid to reach out with questions, and I'd love to talk to you soon. And I knew I was instantly going in that bucket of like creeper, like weird super fan kind of a thing.
Man, isn't it such a double-edged sword? Because you know, Mike, that you don't want to cut off his face and wear it. You know that. Like, you have no idea of murder in this man, but you're like, oh God, does the email sound like I want to cut off his face and wear it? Like, yeah, I understand that, because I have made so many great friends through the podcast. Some of my best friends now are through the podcast. But you just gotta like trust, like, yeah, this one's not a weirdo. Because there's other people that I'm like, I'm keeping that one in arm's bay, because there's just that little, you know, inkling that it could end up into single white female podcaster zone. So I understand this. But yeah, when you write that email, you're like, fuck, I hope I don't come off as a murderer.
And I knew to some degree it was unavoidable. Like,
yeah, yeah.
He probably gets stuff like this all the time at different cons and things that he's doing. But I was like, however I got to spell this out for him, I just need to show enough sanity for him to respond.
Right.
So I hit send on that email, and it took about, I'd say, 2 to 3 weeks. And he eventually emailed me back and said, I'd be interested in learning more. It's very short and sweet. I could still tell he was, you know, he had the chain on the door, but he was peeking through.
Yeah, like, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I'll talk to you, but what do you want? So I traded him another email, and we went back and forth probably 5 or 6 times. And I had to continually reassure him of,
yeah,
this is not a gimmick. There's no angle. There's
not a
hard sell coming. And yeah. And he eventually said, yeah, I'm willing to do this. What do I need to do? And long story short, for the Dan segment of the story, is that we ended up rebuilding his website, danjuergens.com. I was able to work with Dan on not only his vision of what he'd want it to be, but help him kind of fill the gaps on addressing some of the business issues he was dealing with. Because with his pre-existing website, he was, you know, it was dated, like I said, but he was also stuck with, I need a better way to communicate to my fans. I need a better way to tell them where I'm going to be or not going to be in regards to, you know, Comic Cons and shows.
Because that's a big part of their earning, because not only do they get to go out and just make, you know, cash, which is huge, but they get to reignite that connection with people, you know? And it's like, you might just be walking through a con, you see the guy, and you're, oh, you know what? It brings back that memory of like, I bought this with a dollar from my grandfather, and you go and you sign them. And if they're cool and everything, then you're kind of like, I need to go get into the back catalog. Like, it reignites that connectivity, because we live in a world that moves so fast. There's so many items coming at you, but people that you feel a connection to are people that you spend money and spend time with. So in many ways, it's so important to do this. And yeah, if he has one of these, I can only imagine what the old website looks like, because there's just these websites that are just like, an artist can stand enough to put it together, but it's not what they should be doing. Like, you shouldn't be doing Superman. This guy shouldn't be doing websites. And that balance is great. So good on you for helping them also figure out a way to, you know, build a website that not only looks good, but communicates. So you're essentially just doing what you do for corporate clients, but you're picking a passion project.
Right. And what that Dan experience taught me was to just reach out, you know, whether you look creepy or not, reach out, make that connection, But also I started to learn more about the dynamic of being a comic book artist from Dan and how much they rely on those shows and those commissions and kind of the struggle of, you know, the old cliche of a starving artist. And it made me think about it differently. And what came from that is I wanted to then, how can I do this again?
Right.
And for who? And B, how can I formalize this as like being the CyberDogs give back model? How right. can we make this our own
right.
little philanthropy? Because selfishly, we love doing it, but we want to serve a purpose and help people. So to target the art community was kind of the goal, and comics is just kind of where we started. But we affectionately named kind of this process for us, and we have yet to formalize it online, but for us, it's called our Good for Nothing program. And obviously it's good for nothing and it's free, whatnot. But we started to kind of then put some framework to it, having used this Dan Juergens experience as kind of the initial platform. So when we finished Dan's website, I was following other comic artists and just kind of appreciation of, you know, the art. And there was a guy I was following. His name is Chris Capanna. And I had been following his career. And what was interesting to me about Chris is that A, his artwork is fantastic, but B, he was on the climb. Like he hadn't hit the top of the mountain. Like Dan Juergens had accomplished a lot by the time.
Right. He's a legacy act.
Yeah. Chris was still climbing the mountain. And then Chris had a personal tragedy where his fiance and unborn child had passed away during the labor process, I believe.
Hold on. The fiance and the child passed? Yeah.
Oh. He lost them both at the same time.
Oh my God.
And it was a very tragic thing. And you could, Chris basically to some degree chronicled this on his social media platforms. He stepped away from him. He's like, I can't do art anymore. Oh. And for those of us who were following and friends with him, you got to kind of see it happen. And I'm like, okay, that's horrible. I feel for this guy. I'm obviously going to wait and respect his space.
Oh, you didn't email him and go, hey, well, you got some downtime. You want to redo your website?
No, I waited.
Fucking, that's the worst thing. I waited
until he was kind of on his road back.
Sure.
Perfect. And I even contemplated at that time, do I even want to go there? But then I thought, well, why not? He needs help. I can help him. I can do it, you know, on my own time. However, I can kind of help him out. I wanted to do that. So I reached out to Chris and it was a very similar process of, hey, why would you want to do this for me? Why would you want to give this to me for free? So it was a very, you know, kind of a weird introduction, but at the same time, I had to kind of convince him again, no strings attached, dude. I just want to help you out. That's it. I love your art. I love where you're at. I want to help you succeed.
But the second one had to be easier than the first one because you could say, hey, I did this with Dan. And Dan's like, you know, a legacy act. People know who he is in the scene. So that had to at least help you get your second one, right?
I think it did a little bit. But what I then learned from Chris is kind of the same thing I learned from Dan, but it was reinforced, is that that industry is very, I don't want to say cutthroat, but it's very competitive.
And oh,
there's
yeah.
There's a lot of people looking for their cheese, right? Everybody's looking for an angle or looking for some kind of a benefit for themselves. So to come at somebody in that industry and ask for nothing in return is off-putting because they're like, they don't get it.
Yeah, they used to be in hustled all the time. And there's also a lot of competition between the two of them. But I think that this is where, you shine through and where you don't come off as a creeper. I want to wear your face is that they can go over and see that you have a legitimate website, right? They can see that you're a legitimate designer and you have a product. You're not like a fan that's like, hey, I can do something. And then it's like, but are you going to get it done? Like you're a man that meets your deadlines. You've built a business. And so I think that, you know, there is a common bond between fellow creatives, fellow entrepreneurs. And so that already shows that you're like a made man. Because like when I look at the friendships that I've made through the podcast, they're all very successful people that I could kind of look at and be like, all right, if this dude's able to hold this down, probably not also a serial killer. It'd be hard to do that and also murder kids at the same time. So I think that that gets you there. But also, one of the best things I ever learned, you remember old How magazine?
Yeah.
One of the best things I ever read in there, Because when Beth and I got our physical location for our boutique in upstate New York, everybody was coming in with their hand down. We're raising money for this. We're raising money for that. Because when you have a store, you have accessibility, and people also think that you have money. One of those things was true. And so when people were coming looking for something, I read in How Magazine, you should pick who you donate to. Because everybody always hits up the artist to do it for free. Do it for free, do it for free, do it for free. And one of the greatest pieces of advice I've ever gotten, I've tried to hand it out as much as possible, you pick who you donate to. So when people come up to you and go, hey, we're raising money for the kids, could you make a poster? Go, I already gave. We have our own charity. And that way, you pick what you think you should get involved in. You pick the people that you work with. And you're giving back, but you're giving back to something that you care about and something that is aligned with your goals. And then you don't have this weird burden. So I love that you have a successful agency. You want to do something, you want to give back. And yeah, you know, are you making a turkey dinner for somebody standing out on the street? No. But you are looking at these people that work in a really, really sophisticated, hard, demanding part of the industry that you have a genuine passion about, and you're able to pick a couple of cases here and there and help make a difference. I think that's awesome. I think that that is a phenomenal way, and especially when you say that it's tethered to when you're kind of feeling down, these are your pick-me-up projects. Like, I absolutely love that so much, Mike. And when you were telling me that at the end of the interview, I'm like, fuck, this is the interview that we should have had.
Well, and I would even add two things is that...
Please do.
One of the things I can't reinforce enough is these guys are not marketers or developers. They're really good at their craft, and they're artists, and they're, you know, not that they don't have certain skills to try to get themselves out there, but for the most part, the tactical side of building a website or running Facebook ads or whatever it is, they don't have it.
We also don't have the bandwidth.
Yeah. And they're very upfront about, you know, hey, I know my website looks like shit, nothing I can do about it. And then that's where I come in and say, well, maybe there's something I can do about it. And there is a part of this that giving back to the art community, you know, that's kind of the box I've put it in. So it logically sounds good under my business model.
Yep.
But just straight honest, it's just plain selfishness on my part because I enjoy being close to the work. But see, I enjoy meeting these guys. I love hearing their stories. And if I can pick up a shovel and dig with them a little bit, I love it. Like that's what I love about it. It's like, I've had business people say, that's really stupid because you're giving away your product and you're giving it away for free. And that's not smart business. And I'm like, okay, well, the detach it from the business, then I'm just a guy having fun.
Yeah. But there are, first off, you're deciding to do it for free. That's the difference. You know, if somebody comes to you for like, hey, we're doing a website design contest, and if you win, we're going to give you two tickets. Fuck that guy. Okay. That's when it's a scam. But you're an adult. And if you decide that you want to do it for free for certain people, that's a whole different ballgame because you're making that decision. So first off, let's just throw that out. But you're not getting nothing from this. You know, like, you have these websites, you have this connectivity, you have this thing that you can talk about in meetings, how you do this. I mean, there's so many different ways where your freeness can have extreme like social capital and pay off dividends for you. But why I love this story and what I would love for people at home to take from this, when you decide where you donate, this doesn't feel like a chore for you, Mike. You're not like, oh God, why did I say I would make these posters or design the 5K t-shirt for the turkey trot in, you know, Minneapolis or whatever. I got to put all these stupid logos on there. The committee that runs this thing are a bunch of assholes. They have no design aesthetic whatsoever. And then here CyberDogs comes. We have to clean it up. I give it to an intern. Then I have to manage it over the intern. And at the end of the day, it's Friday night and I'd love to be with the family having dinner and watching Netflix. And I'm stuck here doing this fucking stupid thing we're not getting paid for. That's not the case with you. That's the case for most people that donate. They get roped into it. They don't want to do it. They hate it. It sucks. And the process of giving is fundamentally broken. But you have found a way where giving makes you excited. It grows your Rolodex, not your Rolex, but your Rolodex. It gets you in a way where you like get to meet people you want to meet. You get to hear stories. You feel more inclined to it. And one of the worst places you can be, Mike, as an artist, as a creative, popular enough to have a fan base and to have a career, but not profitable enough to have any sort of management. Because when you're being the product and also managing the product, very, very few people can walk that line. And it just sucks that these guys don't make enough money to where there could be, you know, some men and women that go, well, I manage 50 of these guys, and at 15% each, it's a really good career for my agency. There's just not enough money on the table to get that extra help. And the artists that really go someplace in this world, the artists that are the most profitable, are the people that have enough money and resources to bring in a team that helps them get there. You can't do it on your own. So what you're doing, I think, is really invaluable, because these guys don't have the bandwidth. They maybe don't have that part of their brain because they're so dialed into what they're doing. And at the end of the day, drawing 500 Supermans in one day, do you really want to sit back and be like, I think I'm going to brush up on what the new Squarespace plugins are?
Right, right. And not to sidetrack us, but like...
Oh, please do.
One went from another, because even like after... And they're very, like you said, they're two different positions, because Dan was already pre-established. Chris is on his way up and a very successful independent, but not necessarily for any of the big, you know, Marvel, DC, whatnot. And when we concluded Chris's, it was kind of like, you know, hey, we're going to continue to support you in this. So now we're actually supporting Dan and Chris, but now we're trying to figure out, well, who do we do next then? How do we do? And we're, don't get me wrong, we're open to artists across all genres, but we're kind of sucked into this comic thing, right? So I'm on, and I'm sure it's all, you know, whether it's, you know, my Amazon Alexa listening to me, or just depending on what my behaviors are online, I got a suggested connection to Emma Kubert, mm-hmm. would be the next opportunity. And I know the name Kubert because there's an art school up in New Jersey called the Kubert School of Design and Illustration. It's a fantastic place. And I also know that her dad and her uncle and her grandpa were all in the industry. Well, the grandpa's not obviously anymore because he's no longer around.
Yeah.
But her dad and uncle both have done work for Marvel and DC and are considered probably some of the biggest names in comics. So when I got the suggested name to Emma, I was like, well, that's pretty cool. That's pretty neat. And she seemed, you know, from what I could see on her profile, I'm like, I wonder if she needs help. So I, on LinkedIn, I just sent her a message, and I did kind of the same thing with, you know, that I had done with Dan and Chris. I just brief introduction, and here's what I'm trying to do. It's called Good for Nothing, and we want to help out artists that are somewhere in their journey. And if we can help them grow and get to that next level, we want to do that. So ended up connecting with Emma, a little bit of back and forth, like always. And then we started working on her website that's soon to be launched, probably in the next 30 days or so. So hers would be the next one.
I'm glad it hasn't launched publicly yet, because I have the link and I'm like, there's a little lorem ipsum in here. Yep, so I'm glad to know that detail.
Yep, that one launches here probably in the next 30 days. But it's super cool to do something for Emma, who's, like I said, on her way up.
Yeah.
She's doing a very successful self-published comic through Image Comics right now. So she's killing it at a very young age, and we're going to help her get this whole thing established and up and running. The byproduct of what I learned now in all this because of the pandemic in 2020 is having a relationship with Dan, having a relationship with Chris, talking with Emma on a frequent basis, their commissions, their ability to hit shows, make money, and do the things that they do as artists completely came to a screeching halt during the pandemic.
Uh-huh.
So in hindsight, for Dan, Chris, and having these platforms built for them, especially Chris's, because he has the store on there where he can sell prints and continue to generate cash throughout a time where he couldn't do shows or do as many live events. I mean, obviously, I didn't know the pandemic was coming, but in hindsight, I'm like, see, this is fantastic that we were able to put some of these people in a position to sustain their dream.
That's awesome. That is so cool.
During a time where they might have thrown in the towel.
Or just really, really been struggling, and then, you know, take an already difficult career and take on more shit work just to try to make the rent, you know, which is, nobody wants to be in that headspace. But what I think is easy or interesting about this, Mike, is where will it go? You know, you become buds with these people. these people will eventually, you know, they do books, they do this, they do that. I mean, there's just so many. It's so interesting that like now you're kind of in their system of buds. You never know what you might get a paid phone call for. Like, hey, man, you know, like, what would it cost for you to help me out to do this or do that? You know, I mean, like you have, and that's not why you did it. I understand this, but this amount of goodwill, even though it's good for nothing, it is good for something. Like something will come out of this. There's no doubt about it. My biggest fear for you is this, is you've picked and choose who you want to work with. Do I smell something for free? Do I smell a hookup? Ooh, oh, Mike's going to do this for me for free. So that's the thing that I worry about, is you've been the guy trying to prove you're not a serial killer, but you're going to get that serial like cheapskate that's going to come your way. And if I know anything about the world, that's also a client that's never happy. You know what I mean? Like somebody looking for something for free, looking for a hookup. They have that personality where they're also like, could you make it black? You know what I mean? Like, so how do you defend yourself as you tell this story? And as you know, you put this over on your website, how do you sort of keep it to where you're curating your charity instead of all of a sudden getting into the instance that we talked about earlier?
Yeah. And it's funny you bring that up, because that's been kind of my fear from the beginning.
100%.
I don't want a friend of a friend to call me and have to turn them down or say no.
Yeah.
So part of it was I need to formalize the process.
Right.
So that's why we kind of came up with the name Good for Nothing. We're going to formalize the process, and there will be a very robust discovery and almost like interview process to discover and figure out whether or not they qualify. Now, what the qualifications are, I don't know yet.
Right.
But there's a huge part of it that's just personal connection. Like, I don't know if I got lucky out of the gate, but Dan, Chris, Emma, they're some of the nicest people I've ever met. I mean, I've never met them face to face, but as far as just reaching out to a stranger, we've Zoomed and we've talked, and they're just really great people. If I can continue to kind of grow this part of the business and find people like that, there's no end in sight. But I know eventually I'm going to get that guy who's looking for a freebie, and that's not what this is about. This is about lifting somebody up who needs help.
Well, I think already establishing it as something that you do and just putting guidelines, like the Good for Nothing program through CyberDogs, you know, we do two of these a year. We accept an application, or we do one a year. You know, we accept an application, and, you know, if you want to apply, if you know somebody that you think could use it, apply here. And I think doing it more like a scholarship and looking over it, and because you don't want to become the guy where everybody's like, hey, man, they do free websites for artists, bro. Like, you don't want to get on that circuit whatsoever. You want to keep it to where you're picking and choosing. But if you got 3 or 4 or 5 applicants, and, you know, God, I wish I could do all of them, but the rule is we only do one over a certain set of time, you'll pick the story that would resonate with you the most, you know. And there's something charming about helping a legacy act, you know, who you have this personal connection with, establish himself in this time period when, you know, his career could be aging out if he didn't have people like you that were helping stay relevant. You have Chris, which is an unbelievable hard luck story where you're able to, like, you know, give somebody a helping hand who life really gave the shittiest hand you could ever have to play at the table. And then also Good for You, a young woman in an industry that's normally been dominated by, you know, men coming up. You know, back in the day, women used to have to deal with a lot of sleazy people. And it's good in today's world to give a woman a helping hand and say, I know this might not be an easy journey for you, so I want to make it easier for you to get to where I think you should be. And really, 3 completely different styles too. So I think you've really chose well. And I think you're absolutely right. Like, building a structure to it will make sure that you can continue to do this with good results, make good relationships, and not get taken advantage of.
Yeah, because it's, you know, I need to build this into the plan, the structure, so that people can wrap their minds around it and digest it, actually what it is that we're doing.
Right.
You know, using the word free in this process is so that people can put their swords away.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, it's about impact, and it's about helping this industry that I wanted to go into that industry. And like we talked about, fast forward a few years, we find out, man, this industry is ridiculously hard. It's very competitive.
It's brutal.
That's those are the gaps I want to fill and help these guys sustain on their own. And yeah, maybe they enjoy their journey a little bit more because of that help. I don't know. But
well, I mean, a good website, you don't realize where all the new emails or the sales are coming from. You know, like sometimes you'll make a little adjustment. You're like, man, things are going really, really well right now. And then it dawns on you like, oh, it's the repercussion of that thing that I did 30 days ago. Or all of a sudden things get really, really quiet. And you're like, I guess I was undervaluing posting on Instagram once a day. You know what I mean? Like there's just these things that you don't realize the cause and effect until you get 30, 90 days out. And then you go, I wonder if it was that thing that is making the good or bad difference in my career. You know? So I'm sure with these folks having a more solid way to connect with their fans, a good way to move product, a good way to make a relationship, have people celebrate them, just easier to get Googled. You know what I mean? Like, there's just so much benefit to having a really well-rounded website. My dude, Enone, who does my website and fucking charges me like an asshole, he is a partner to my business, you know, because if you're going to help somebody do the website, you essentially take on a partnership role because it's that important. So the relationship I have with Enone, even though I pay him and technically, you know, I'm the boss in the business dynamic, when we're on the phone, he tells me what we're going to do and I'm taking notes and I'm listening to him because in this situation, he's the expert and I'm not. You know, I've made the product, I'm the personality, but he says, we're going to do this, this, and this. And I push back if it doesn't make sense. Oh, I don't think you thought about that one from my perspective. And, you know, he'll hear me out and be like, oh, okay. Because he does know that I know my industry better, but he knows the web better. He knows the website. He knows the SEO. He knows the journey better. And so it's fun to sit back and have somebody tell me how to run my business because I trust them. And so I think that trust that you make with these folks too, that's huge and why it becomes a friendship, because you actually are helping them with something that they probably dread.
Yeah. And I think the big thing, and I'm sure you have this with your guy, is that when you know things are humming and he's doing his part to kind of get you there, you walk into every situation with confidence.
Yes. So
that when you finally throw your URL at somebody, go, hey, check me out online, you can feel good about that.
100%.
So when I kind of went through the version, like I wanted his website to represent just the comic book god that he is. Like I wanted to bring him up to his own, like I want to bring you up to the level because you're that awesome. And for Chris, and I've told Chris this, I hope that in some way, when you break in, when you finally get your Spider-Man title or whatever it is, I hope it's because they checked you out online.
Yeah.
And I hope it's because that website did a service for you. I mean, I hope that's the case. And for Emma, similar, like I wanted to help her not only shine in an industry where it's very competitive, it's male dominated, all those things, but I wanted her to live up to the legacy that she probably has to live down every day. I mean, it's probably a curse and a blessing to be
100%
Emma Kubert, but at the same time, there's probably people thinking that she just got there because of who she is. And that's not necessarily the case. She's wicked talented.
Oh, yeah.
Check her out. Like, she's fantastic. So,
yeah, her family will get her the meeting, right? No doubt about it. Her family will get her into the room. And also, in this time and age, being a woman will get you into the room. But if you can't fucking slay, if you don't have the chops, and if you can't make the deadlines, you will slowly get asked to leave said room and you won't get invited back, you know? Okay. So, yeah, there are definite things that can get your foot in the door. But once you got your foot in the door, you got to be something that's worthy, you know? Like the worst thing in the world to be if your John Lennon's son is a musician, right? Because everybody's willing to work with you, but there's got to be a product there, you know? And so it is a blessing and a curse.
Yeah, independently, I just wanted to give them the confidence to, you know, to kind of have that tool in their toolbox, because at the time where I met them, they didn't.
Yeah. Well, Mike, in the spirit of giving back, because this is such a great conversation that I think that a lot of creative people could think about, you know, how do I overcome career depressions, you know, maybe working on something bigger than myself will help me find myself. Because I believe that this is such a really great conversation, I'm making the entire episode today free for everybody to hear. So people that aren't members of the Circle of Trust can hear the bonus content and hear this entire conversation. It wouldn't feel right for me to be like, I'm going to profit off of Mike's charity. Bricky's the one who gets paid here. But I just thought that this was a really, really great conversation. And, you know, you hear a lot of people with good ideas like, oh, man, you know what we should do? Like, Black Lives Matter, it really moved me and we want to get on board. And then the conversation moves, life feels normal. And it was a really good idea. It was a really good plan, but nobody really, I mean, people did stuff, but you know, you had a great idea. You and your friends were like caught up in the headlines, but you didn't actually see the project through. And for you to tell me this story, but for you to actually now have three successful projects, two online and one that's getting ready to launch. And my God, that's a cute dog in the background. It was a really great story to bring on and to share, because you had the idea, but more importantly, you had the follow through. And a lot of us get to the first step, but the second step is where most people fall off.
Yeah. And I don't know if this helps the story or not, but it was hard. It was hard to not follow through when the Dan Juergens email hit my inbox the first time.
Yeah.
I was 10 years old again.
Hey man, I pulled a couple strings and I knew that I would be up in the Santa Cruz area, and I was able to get an interview with my hero, Jim Phillips, the artist who did all the original skateboard graphics for Santa Cruz. And in fact, my friend Brian, who owns Super 7, Brian Flynn, he showed me, he's got an insane skateboard collection, hundreds of skateboards. But he showed me one of the most impressive things ever. It was a Santa Cruz skate deck that still had the registration marks on it. And he said, this deck was taken to the convention where, you know, all the skate companies go to get buyers to buy. And he goes, this skate deck was taken to that convention with graphics on the bottom. And that's when Santa Cruz said, by the way, we're switching over to wood decks and we're going to start putting art on the bottom. And so to sit across from Jim Phillips, not only in his home, not only in his garage where he's got his hot rod and one of everything that he made. It was like sitting in a Google search of your subject, right? Like there was decks hanging from the wall, banners, shelves with wheels on them, surfboards. And don't worry, he showed me, he's like, he had put a like bank vault steel door on the garage. Like, nobody's getting in here. And he even took me into his home and opened up the flat files and let me hold like the original ink for the original Screaming Hand or the Corey O'Brien or the Jason Jesse. But aside from all of that, getting to sit across from the guy that I remember being fifth grade old, and I got into a magazine and I saw the California Cheapskates ad, and I remember seeing that Rob Roskalp deck of the arm busting through the target. I'm like, man, I don't know what's on the other side, but I want to go there. And that was the guy that got me into skate art, which got me into punk, which got me into hardcore, which got me into being in a band, which then got me into the music industry. Like, it was the guy that got me on the tracks. And when I got to knock on the door and sit in the garage and ask him whatever I wanted for 2 hours, it was like, fuck, man, this is why you live your life. This is why you take chances, because at some point it all comes back around and you're like, I just made fifth grade Mark Bricky fucking stoked that all of this is happening.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And the times I've been able to have some really just personal conversations with Dan, I'm like, I mean this as a huge compliment to Dan, but I'm so put off by his humbleness. Right. I'm like, would you just brag? Just come on, brag about something, dude. Because I'm asking him all these questions and he's very just nonchalant. Yeah, you know, I mean, you know, death of Superman. I'm like, what? Big deal. Yeah. So like, yeah, it's great to be able to talk to those guys, and it's all relative too. I mean, they say things about their industry or maybe an experience that they had during their time and it just clicks. It's like, dude, I know what you're talking about. Different place, but I get it.
It's widgets, you know, it's widgets. Yeah. And you know, I love that in the art world, no matter who I'm interviewing, whether they're a filmmaker or a musician or an illustrator, the creative process is the creative process, right? And what I love about being an entrepreneur, well, first, what I love about being an artist is there's a complete bond between all of us. It's all the same struggle. It's all the same personal insecurities. It's all feeling like you're not getting paid enough. But aside from that, if we go up another level, I love that if you're at an airport, you know, getting ready to catch a flight, and the dude next to you is also owns his own business. It doesn't matter if he's a doctor with a staff of 50 or a mechanic that just does stuff out of his garage. If somebody else is on the other side of the fence where they run their own shop, no matter how big or how small it may be, you've got an instant bond because business is business. And some of us are designed to be the boss and some of us are designed to be the worker. And it's just two different mindsets. And you have a hard time sometimes bonding with people on the other side of the fence because we think that having a job must be great. You don't have to think. People just give you money every Friday. And it's like, dude, you have no idea how bad it sucks. And then being a boss is like, it must be great. You do whatever you want to do on Tuesdays. Like, you have no idea how I have created a prison that I can't get out of. Right. So I just love there's a complete bond between everybody. But you doing this and why this is such a great example of giving is I bet you are just a kid on Christmas when these folks hit you that Dropbox link. Like, well, here's the art that I think that should be on the website. And you just get to look through it and you get to figure out in your mind, like, now you get to be creative with their art. Like, okay, I know how to do some animations to do process. Like, you must just be a kid on Christmas when those emails hit your folder.
I will say this. I'll go one by one. When Dan sent me the original art, like, here's the artwork I want on my website, and some of this stuff dates back to the 80s, 90s, whatever. It was Christmas times 10. I was like, oh, I mean, it was like I got to root through his secret stash when he wasn't home or something. Like, it was awesome.
Phenomenal, man.
And for Chris, it was like I got to relate to the fact that he's still climbing.
Yes.
And I felt like, dude, like I get the grind and I wanted to be where you were at. So I got to really kind of be on his level and look at the stuff and think, man, you're going to make it. You're going to make it, dude. And I'm rooting for you. And for Emma, like, she's a great collaborator. So like when we've talked about her website, or if I say, God, wouldn't it be cool if we had a piece of art like this, you know, 5 days later, it's in the Dropbox. And I'm like, okay, she just created a piece of art that I suggested. I art directed Emma for like a second. Yeah. So yeah, when that art comes in, it's fun.
That's so cool, man. And that's what giving should be, right? Like you're giving your time, but you're getting something out of it. And one of the greatest things that I've learned in life, I talk about this all the time, it's sort of this mindset I have where I refer to myself as an emotional millionaire. And the idea is this. Once I looked at what made me happy, I'm like, I'm never going to be rich, right? Like it's just like a fact. I'm never going to be rich. But what if I move into a neighborhood where rich people live? And what if I go to the same Whole Foods they go to? What if I eat at the same restaurants? What if occasionally I shop at the same stores? By proxy, I am living a millionaire's lifestyle. But I didn't have to do something that made me unhappy to get there. Every day I wake up and I do stuff that completely entertains me. I, you know, my wife, her calling was nutrition. And she helps a lot of people, mainly women that are just, you know, health is giving them a run for their money. And so she loves what she does, but it's hard sometimes, you know, to talk to somebody and to try to help them overcome their journey. It's very, very hard. And we were driving the other day and she goes, I'm so envious of you, because she's like, even though you put in more hours than me, everything you do, you just absolutely love. And one of the things I love about doing this job is like, this is where you're at, Mike. And this is a bond that we have. You never got to become that comic book artist you dreamt about. But now that you're buds with Chris and you're seeing a man on the way on the inside, you're riding shotgun with him. So even though you didn't get to do it, you know what that experience is like. And even though my band, we talked to the major record labels, we toured, we just were with an arm's length of the goal, and like a poorly paced boxer, we swung too hard in the first rounds. And then when all we had to do was knock out our opponent, we were just too exhausted to throw that last crucial punch, and the band broke up out of exhaustion when the prize was right in front of us. So that's a huge regret of mine. But my friends that did make it, that did sign the record contracts, that did go that next level, I got to be in the tour bus. I got to stand on the side of the stage. I got to run out and sing the chorus with them. And so even though I didn't do it, I know what it feels like. So it's not a regret because I got that experience and this one, which ultimately was a much better experience in my opinion. So there's a way when you ride shotgun with somebody, their experience becomes yours. Fuck, Mike, I love this story, man. Like, this is the best story about charity ever. And I hope people listening, if they have the bandwidth, just to help someone, like, you could just help out somebody who's struggling with their social media. Like, hey, man, I see you're struggling with your social media, Bricky. I want to help you. Yes, that was an invitation.
We just did two yesterday. I interviewed two TikTok, I guess they'd be celebrities, but they have huge followings on TikToks. Like, they're in the hundreds of thousands in followers and in the millions in views.
Yeah.
And I just bonded so well on the interviews that I'm like, hey, can I create a logo for you?
Yeah,
that's great. And they're like, sure. I'm like, sweet. So like, if it's clicking, man, I love helping people out. And I love helping them where I know there's a gap. Because they clearly haven't found that person to help them. They haven't had the money to do it or whatever the case may be. If I can jump in there and just give them that boost, that's what I want. And you had mentioned kind of that analogy of riding shotgun. I always look at it like I can be Michael Jordan when I can be, but sometimes I'll be Scottie Pippen or
hell yeah,
or Jack Haley or Judd Bushler. I don't give a shit.
They still have the trophy. They still have the trophy, right? They still have like, hey, I won. I made it to the top. Yo.
Think of all the guys that have rings that played with Jordan that you could never name. That never get recognized in public. They all got a ring, though.
Still got it on the shelf, though, when you go over to the house, man, and they got that pick. That's all that matters. Yeah, no, I mean, and we have to, at some moment in our life, realize that not everyone is Michael Jordan. You know what I mean? Like, not everybody can be 23, and it's just the way that it is, you know? And it's like, when we look at all these greats in sports, like, I just loved Brett Favre. I loved watching him play. I loved his energy. Like that night that his old man passed away and he came out and threw 5 touchdowns of 400 yards. Like what an amazing performance that was. But he needed somebody to catch that fucking ball.
At the time, I'm a Minnesota Viking. So at the time, I hated Brett Favre.
Yeah, you did.
And I was like, I'm going to root for this guy just this once.
Yeah.
And then it turned into more when he came to Minnesota. But
right.
On that night, I watched that entire game, and it was a game changer because it had substance. It wasn't just about the game anymore.
Well, you know, I told one of my friends when I was younger, I said, the reason why I don't like sports is because I'd rather watch movies or I'd rather watch TV shows. Like, I like the story. And my friend looked at me and goes, sports is a story. He's like, you just have to take the time to learn the players and learn what they have online, and sports is the greatest story. And that didn't really like resonate with me at the time, but now that I'm a huge NFL fan, just like over the last week being like, where is Julio Jones from the Falcons gonna go, right? You got this amazing wide receiver who has just been burnt by being in a bad team, and it's like, who can make the most of this guy while he's still got gas in the tank? And now that he's going over to the Tennessee Titans, I'm like, dude, there's going to be a lot of people trying to beat the Titans this year that are going to come up short, because that was kind of one of the things that they're missing. They got a solid quarterback, you know, above average guy. I don't think he's an all-star. They've got a great running back. Now they've got that wide receiver. The Titans are going to be fierce this year. And now that is something I'm invested in. So when I look at the season and I see the games, I'm like, ooh, if the Titans play the Ravens this year, there's going to be blood. There's going to be so much blood, and the Titans are showing up with like, okay, Lamar Jackson can run. Check out our wide receiver. Try to block this guy. So it's just like when you get invested in the story, it makes the sport even sweeter. We've completely been the Todd McFarlane episode. We've talked about sports now and action figures and comic books.
And that guy, though, like even like a Tim Tebow, like,
yeah,
does he really need more money, more chances? It's all debatable, but he's going to be appreciative for that last chance, that chance to do something. And that's what I always look at when I deal with these clients or looking for an opportunity to help, is you can't read a book by its cover, and you just
100%.
If you see a gap, you help, you know, and everybody needs help. So,
but even going back to sports and then we'll wrap up today, or going to sports and story, like I don't really follow the sport of fighting. You know, there's not, I don't know, boxing, the people always will claim that it's rigged because there's so much money involved in all this stuff. But if you give me a good story with a fight, I will 100% show up and watch Logan Paul fight Floyd Mayweather, because it's just such a freak show. And now the next big one in a couple of weeks is TikTokers versus YouTubers, right? Like these are not professional fighters. This is a shit show. And Mike, I will show up and watch every minute of it because there's a fascination of what will happen, you know, and that's what good storytelling is. And to a bit to what you're doing, what will happen if these artists that can't do it all has a bud come in and help them do a little bit more? What will happen? You know, and with the people that you've worked with, like you're making this, you know, later part of Dan's career move a little bit better and more effortlessly. And then you're helping Chris on the way up. So it'll be interesting for you to see what happens. And you can 100% take pride in what happens because you know you're part of the team, you know, and you're not kidding yourself. You're not like, I did Dan's career, but you can say, I was a part of it and I helped make it happen. I'm the guy that nobody knows in the Bulls, but I got the trophy on the shelf.
Yep.
Dude, thank you so much for sharing this with me. Thank you for coming back so quickly and doing this. We have to do it again, man. Like, this is such a great episode, and I'm honored to give it out to everybody for free, because when somebody comes on the show and talks about charity, I feel like it's my opportunity to just pass it on. So like right now I'm the guy at Starbucks. You just bought my drink, so I'm buying it for the car behind me. But when I get out of the drive-thru, I'm going to drive as fast as I can because I don't want to see you. I just want to give you the drink and I don't want to see you.
let me throw one more at you.
Please do, Mike.
You had mentioned the Santa Cruz and being a fan of the Santa Cruz brand. We've done a series of internal designs for our brand that just like us as team members wear. And we actually have a Santa Cruz inspired design for CyberDogs. When we get offline, give me your address and I'll mail you some swag, because it's super cool. Like, well, I'm a Santa Cruz guy myself, and just over the course of the last 6 months, we created a whole line of stuff. So,
oh, that's awesome.
Something you might get a kick out of.
And what a good challenge too. Like, let's just make some stuff internal just to keep it fun, you know, to have fun. One of my favorite like little memes or images that gets passed over to me is, me in 1992 or 1982, and it's the screaming hand, and then it's like me in 2022, and the screaming mouth is now coming out of your back, and it looks all achy and sore, and it's like, yeah, I was taking on the world, now I'm just trying to get out of bed every morning without complaining.
Right. Well, I like paying homage to those brands that kind of built you to this point.
100%.
I know a lot of young artists, when you throw these brands at them, like, hey, Santa Cruz, and they're like, I have no idea what you're talking about. And then, of course, for me, it's mind-blowing. Like, how do you not know?
I know. But
generational, you know?
Yeah, and it's like, you know, for me, it's the Pal Peralta graphics just got me, my mind buzzing about what all that could be, like Santa Cruz and Pal Peralta, and even, you know, a little bit of the graphic design that Vision was putting out. But there is a generation that is now inspired by artists that were inspired by those guys, you know? So it's like, we're all on this train. It's just kind of like where you jump in the timeline, and then, you know, do you stay relevant and keep following what comes after you? Mike, you're a busy guy. I got to let you get back to work. Thank you so much for hanging out and sharing this with us. And everybody who's listening, like, you know, copy and paste. You know, what worked exactly for Mike might not work for you. So don't Apple A, but do a little Apple C, a little Apple V. And the best advice I think you could take from this entire episode, you're an artist, you're creative. People are 100% going to try to take advantage of you. So the best thing you can do right now is figure out what are you excited about? Where would giving make most sense for you? Commit yourself to a cause and let that be your cause. And the only time you decide to work for free is just what I said, when you decide to work for free. Nobody else picks that for you but you. Mike, thank you so much for hanging out with us. Sincerely appreciate it. You want to give the podcast a quick plug where people can go hear more about you? I saw you released your origin story.
Yeah, Brand Retro is the name of my podcast, and we talk about branding, obviously, but I always talk about that connection point, which I call the brand retro mindset, where that first idea comes to you and you first develop that passion and that love for what you're doing. It's about keeping that on the forefront so your brand stays true to what it was intended to be.
There you go. All right, everybody. I will be back here tomorrow with the wild animals from Hammer Time. If you decide to show up, I'd love to have you. Have a good day.